Blog Talk Radio.
Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to the whole staff at Talladega Super Speedway, Russell Branham and track president Grant Lynch. Tickets are on sale now for the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series, Fred's 250, October 18th, and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, Geico 500, October 19th. Purchase your tickets, call 877-GO-TODEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have an icon in our sport of NASCAR, Mr. Tiger Tom Pistone. I call him Mr. Pistone. He'll be on the show at 6:20 Central Time, 7:20 Eastern Time, and we have a late entry, and I'm not going to penalize him for missing the driver's meet. We're not going to send him to the tail end of the longest line before the race. But we've got Mr. Justin Boston, driver of the number 25 Zaloop Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. He'll be coming on at 7 Central, 8 Eastern time. And at this time, I'd like to bring my good friend, Mr. Reverend Joe, on. We always like Reverend Joe. He is our reverend. We're going to bring Reverend Joe on, and we're going to let him do the invocation. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing good, Reverend Joe. We're doing good. Just can't wait to get this chase grid going and see how this new thing's going to pan out.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, but I think it'll be fun.
Yes, sir. I do, too.
Are we ready to get started?
Yes, sir. You got the floor, Reverend.
Lord, we come before you today, and we ask you to please watch over all of us. Bless all those who are on a racing. Keep them all protected. Keep them all safe. Don't have any kinds of problems. Keep our eyes on what we're supposed to be doing. Help us to do it well. Protect us all. Help us to keep our eyes on you, Lord, because that's what you told us to do. And that's the best way to be successful. So bless us all and be with us all in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
Amen. Joe, thank you very much again, and we'll give you the floor here for just a few minutes. Do you have anything you'd like to say about what y'all got going on again, and any new things or any prayer requests you'd like to send out? You got the floor, bud.
Well, thank you. I first of all want to send out our prayers and condolences to our good friend J.D. Reese, who passed away this past week. Was a car builder and a racer local here, and we're thinking of him. We're going to have a service for him on Saturday. Also, we got out to one of our local facilities this past weekend and had some fun. Track that I love very much, and haven't gotten out there in about a year and a half because finance has been tight. Got out there this past weekend, had a good old time. Great facility called Willow Springs, and they've got 7 different tracks there, flat oval, asphalt track, a dirt track, 7-mile, a big road course, and 7 other tracks there. It's a neat facility. Had a great time out there and camped out for the weekend and all that good stuff. But we're excited about this upcoming chase and think it's going to be an interesting layout, as you mentioned a few moments ago. So anyway, any help anyone can give us, we're getting ready to go to Vegas for the truck race. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org. There's a donate spot there if you want to help out. If our listeners would just kick in $5 a month or whatever, it would sure help us get to the places we need to go. But all that aside, we're still on the road and going because that's what Jesus told us to do. So God bless you all. And thank you, Tim, for the time.
Yes, sir. God bless you too, Reverend Joe. Be safe this week, bud, and we'll talk at you next week.
Absolutely. God bless you. Take care.
Yes, sir. You too, bud. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was our Reverend for the show. And at this time, I'd like to bring on my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen, how's everything up in Virginia this evening, my friend?
Well, we're trying to stay out of the flood that's up here. We've had a two-day monsoon up here, but otherwise, doing pretty good.
I understand that. And I know, you know, yourself and Miss Anne-Marie, y'all was at Richmond this weekend. That's a whole other story that we can talk about. But we've got Pistone coming on here in about a little less than 10 minutes. You want me to do the nationwide post-race coverage and you cover the cup?
Sure thing.
Okay, all right. I'll start with the Nationwide Series. NASCAR Nationwide Series, race number 25. For the 34th annual Virginia 529 College Savings 250, Friday, September 5th, 2014, Richmond International Raceway. Kyle Busch won the Virginia 529 College Savings 250, his 67th NASCAR Nationwide Series victory. Golly, I cannot believe that. Prior to the start of the race, the following car dropped to the rear of the field for reasons indicated, number 44, unapproved adjustments. And I hate to bring that up because that's my good friend, Will Kimmel. Sorry about that, Will, but I had to bring it up. Failed to qualify was number 17 of Tanner Berryhill and number 70 of Derek Cope. Time of the race was 2 hours, 1 minute, and 11 seconds. Average speed was 92.835 miles an hour. Margin of victory was 1.323 seconds. Caution flags was 6 for 38 laps. Lead changes, well, they got a zero among one driver. So, you know, you can't complain there. But anyway, Stephen, that's just a little bit of throwdown in the infraction sheet from Richmond International. I won't go over that, and I'll let you cover the cup side because there was a lot of stuff going on. I know you were there. I keep saying that. And you got the floor, bud. I want to hear what you have to say because I wish I could have been there with you, boy.
Well, I'm just going to throw one more thing in there about the nationwide race. Kyle Busch did lead all 250 laps straight from the pole. It was the second time in his career that he actually led every single lap in the nationwide race. And, in fact, he was the last driver to accomplish that feat in the nationwide series. And it happened back on February 26th of 2011 at Phoenix International Raceway. So I just want to throw that in there. He dominated that race right from the pole all the way through the race. Nobody had anything for him the whole time. So, anyway, it's going to kick over here to the Sprint Cup Series race held at Richmond International Raceway this weekend for the Federated Auto Parts 400. Brad Keselowski won the race, 57th annual Federated Auto Parts 400. It's his 14th victory in 187 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series events. He led 383 of the 400 laps scheduled that night. And the most laps led in a 400-lap race at Richmond in Richmond history. It was also his fourth victory and 13th top 10 of 2014, which he left out of there, putting him in the number one seed for the chase for the Sprint Cup going into this weekend at Chicago Land Speedway. Jeff Gordon finished second, Clint Bowyer third, and Ryan Newman and Greg Biffle clinched the final two spots there at Richmond International Raceway to put them in the 16-driver chase heading into this week in there at Chicago.
Yeah, and I was going to read off, I know you got it from NASCARmedia.com too, Stephen. NASCAR revises National Series qualifying format at Talladega Super Speedway, but that's something we can talk about later before you know, we bring Tony B and Justin Boston on. But you had brought up a point last week, and I don't think we got to really talk about it that much. We were talking about the way that the 16 seeds were seeded as far as the new chase scenario, as far as wins. If you win, you're in, is what NASCAR says, Robin Pemberton, Kerry Tharp. And, you know, you brought up a good point last week, and we don't want to rattle no cages. We don't want to kick nobody in the knee. But you had said last week that NASCAR might need to check into maybe – redoing this new chase scenario as far as if you win, you're in. Do you have to have a win if you're in the top 30 is the way it is now? Do you think they need to drop back to the top 25 or top 20? Because, you know, they want, quote-unquote, your superstars in the chase.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I had said last week, I think there needs to be a little bit of a tweaking into that. I mean, you take a look at some drivers like Eric Almirola and A.J. Allmendinger, which both, have locked themselves in by virtue of that win. You know, you taking a look at those guys where Ryan Newman, he was running ninth in the points coming into Richmond, and he was not seeded into the race, the Sprint Cup Chase at all. You know, heading that way, like I said, Eric Almirola, he was running 22nd in the Sprint Cup Series points, and A.J. Allmendinger, he was 23rd. Now, I said last week, I think the top 25 is probably a good number, and both of them definitely this week they got within the 25. Whether we need to change that up or not for next year, you know, I'm not too sure about that still. I think some tweaking needs to be done. I think the top 30 is a little too much. Top 25, I believe, would be sufficient enough to get those 16 drivers in. Plus, I think it would put some of those drivers that are around that 25th mark that were running this year. You take a look at people like Casey Mears, Martin Truex, Stewart, Stenhouse, Patrick, A.J., Allgaier, and some of the other drivers that are out there. You know, that would make them battle a little bit harder. We might see one of those guys even come up there for a win, especially knowing that they're going to be, the field is going to be reduced next year. And that's just a suggestion. I mean, you know, we can play armchair quarterback every single week on what should have, could have, won off. But, you know, top 30, I think, is a little too much. Top 25, I believe it's sufficient enough after we've seen what we saw this year, and especially with the fact that we only had 13 winners throughout the season. I know we talked a little bit earlier this year where we wouldn't see 16 winners, and pretty much everybody agreed on that. I think next year, after they've gotten their feet wet with this first chase for the Sprint Cup, the drivers next year may be competing on a whole different level, trying to get themselves locked in, especially trying some things, you know, anything. Throwing the kitchen sink, basically, at a win. So I think that would, top 25 would definitely give it a lot more competition in there, in the bottom side, especially like that. And I think heading into Richmond, you really just have to look at drivers like, you know, Ryan Newman, that was ninth, and I think he should have already been locked in. Granted, he didn't have a win, but he was already ninth, and he was heading into the Richmond race, and all he had to do is start the race and finish 33rd. And he was going to lock himself in. You know, I like I said, I think that was kind of a little strange when you see that, you know, on paper. It may not seem strange when you're talking about it, but once you see it on paper, it's a little strange.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Stephen. And, you know, you definitely touched on a little thing here. This is the first time that, you know, NASCAR and Kerry Tharp and Robert Pemberton, the whole bunch here at NASCAR, has implemented this new chase grid just like this with, you know, 16 drivers in top. But, you know, if you have a win, a top 30 in points, and, you know, like you said, you know, we might be jumping to conclusions. You know, let's see how everything plays out this year. And, you know, maybe next year, you know, I don't know if they'll make any changes. They're probably going to, you know, check it out and see how it does next year. And I would totally agree, Stephen. You know, just anything new, you know, the media, myself, yourself, anybody's going to try to say, you know, we need to tweak this, tweak that. But you brought up a very good point. Let's just wait and see how everything plays out and see if it does the right thing for NASCAR.
Yeah, at this point, I think that's what we need to do. We need to wait it out and see how it goes. We've got 10 races left in the year, and it's definitely, you know, we're going to start knocking some of these guys off coming here after they leave out of Dover, Talladega, and Phoenix, and then it's going to drop it all the way down to the four drivers there at Miami Homestead Speedway. So there's a lot of competition left in this year. I think we're going to see some surprises in these drop-offs and these knockout eliminators that they've got, and it'll definitely be interesting to see how it goes. I don't think that we're going to see Jimmy Johnson this year, and this is just my personal opinion, is that any time that the chase has been changed, Jimmy Johnson has always struggled in the change, but it's always taken him a year or two from that change to come back and compete right there at the top. I think this year will be a year where we're going to see somebody different. Jeff Gordon is definitely very hungry for his fifth championship. Brad Keselowski, he put four wins under him in the first 26 races of the year, and definitely Kevin Harvick is another strong contender out there. And we just might see some of those guys even be knocked out, especially at a place like Talladega where anything could happen when you're 43 deep in that pack.
Yeah, that's right, Stephen. And you touched on another thing. You know, NASCAR.com, they've, I don't know if you've checked it out, you know, they got this little game going where you can pick your chase grid and go through there, and, you know, they got a chance to win $100,000. I would definitely recommend every NASCAR fan to go in there, you know, sign up, log on to NASCAR.com and give this thing a shot. I've already done mine, and I know my final four, I think I picked Jeff Gordon for the champion, you know, as we go into Homestead. I think I picked Jeff Gordon for my champion. I think I had Keselowski in there. I know I had Kevin Harvick. And, you know, Kevin Harvick, that's another story that, you know, me and you can talk about all night long and everything else with Stuart Haas Racing. Kevin has had a really, really great year.
Yeah, Kevin has had a really good year. It's, you know, most, a lot of people that you see come over from teams, especially take a look at what Matt Kenseth did last year. Matt Kenseth came in to Joe Gibbs Racing. He had multiple wins throughout the year and contended there, you know, later on in the season. But definitely Kevin Harvick changing over there to Stuart Haas this year from Rich Childress Racing, where he in the last couple of years has been lackluster, to say the least. He came in, he won two races this year. He finished seventh in the points, leaving you out of Richmond, and then he was reseeded down, you know, based on that. So, you know, definitely he's definitely got a lot going for him. Stuart Haas Racing today said that they were going to change the tire changers and the Jackman from Stewart's team over to Kevin Harvick's team. In fact, those same crewmen that are going to be moved from Stewart's team to Harvick's team for these last 10 races of the year were on Tony Stewart's 2011 winning Sprint Cup Championship team. So these guys, they know what they're doing. Not that Kevin Harvick's team didn't know what they were doing, but these guys are, you know, used to being in the chasing areas, used to winning championships, and I think that we're going to see a little bit different gameplay with Kevin Harvick going throughout these last 10 races.
I did not know that, Stephen. That is a really good point. I did not know that. I've been so busy. But, Stephen, at this time, we've got legendary NASCAR driver and one of our forefathers that has paved the way for NASCAR as it is today. We want to bring Mr. Tiger Tom Pistone in the pit stop with Tim the Spanish, Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Mr. Pistone, this is Tim Spain. How you doing this evening, my friend?
Good, good. What relationship are you to Dave?
I've had a lot of people ask me that, Mr. Pistone, and my papa's first name was Dave, and I would like to talk to Dave and see if, you know, either him or myself changed our last name. I really don't know, but all of us Dispains have that receding hairline just like Dave, Tiger.
There's got to be a cover then. You need to check into that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And yeah. I would really like to be related to him. Maybe he could help us out with our radio show, Tiger.
Yeah, good, good.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing this evening, Mr. Pistone? You doing okay?
Yeah, so far. Well, have you got anything you want to talk about?
Well, I was just going to, you know, like, you know, Suzanne had talked to Chrissy and everybody else. We're just going to leave it sort of up to you, and I've got my my good friend Stephen Wilson, my co-host. We got him here with us,
okay.
Also, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. But I have one question, Mr. Pistone,
okay.
And I'll...
Tiger.
And, okay. All right. Thank you, Tiger. I'm sorry, Tiger. That's just the way I was raised.
That's okay.
But when you were racing, I think it was 1960, when y'all were in Daytona, I've watched the clip on Fox or Speed about you wore a life preserver and an oxygen tube because of, I think it was Tommy Irwin. Was that the guy that went into the Lake Lower there in Daytona?
Yeah, Tommy Irwin. That's why I asked you if you was any relationship to Dave, because Dave had a show on. He showed it quite a bit. He had a whole segment on it. And he showed how Tommy Irwin went in the lake, and they showed them pulling the car out of the lake. That was in 1959.
Yes, sir. That's where I watched it. I remember watching that, Dave. That's where I seen it. Yes, sir. So, now, don't let me cross boundaries, Tiger, but did you wear that because you couldn't swim, or you just wore that as a safety precaution for your safety?
Well, nobody paid attention to that lake that was in the middle of the racetrack. You know, because all we had to do was concentrate in that racetrack because nobody knew anything about drafting and everything else like that. Well, Tommy Irwin went into the lake. And back then, the 59 T-Birds, they had a unit construction body. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about that. It's a one-piece body. And we had to run up with our windows, you know, rolled up because you couldn't get the speed. We had stock window regulators in the car, just like a stock automobile we had. And Tommy went in the lake, and he stayed down there for a long time. And I couldn't figure out why he stood down there so long. After he came out, we all talked to Tommy, and Tommy said that if he wouldn't have found that crank handle, he wouldn't be here today. What happened is the crank handle turns the window down, it fell off, and it was on the floorboard, and he was searching the floorboard looking for that crank handle to turn the window down, and they finally found it. Otherwise, he'd be still down there. So me, I can't swim and scared of water. I went down to Daytona, and I bought a life jacket and the Aqualung and the tank I bought. I wore the whole unit I wore.
NASCAR probably would not let you do that nowadays, would they, Tiger?
Well, we ran it for a few races, but A.J. Foyt, you know, the man that he was, you know, he always likes to win no matter what. He took that oxygen tank and he filled it up with nitrous oxide. And NASCAR found out about it after a couple of races, and they outlawed that tank. So then I was stuck. I couldn't wear a tank, but I could wear a life jacket I could wear.
Yes. And, Tiger, I've got another question, and I want to thank you again for, you know, coming on. And me and Stephen talked earlier, we could probably talk to you for half a night talking about back in the day. But now you were, which I got to meet Cotton Owens, you know, unfortunately, you know, he's not with us today. I got to meet Cotton a few years back here at the Hall of Fame in Talladega, and super guy. But now I want to ask you a question about Tim Flock. You were friends with Tim Flock, correct?
Yeah, great friends.
Okay. And I've heard the story about the monkey riding in the car. And
yeah,
the monkey would look down. And he would look down, and, you know, I've heard different stories, you know, that the monkey could look down and tell when the right front was worn, and he would tell Tim Flock he needed to pit, which, you know, I don't know if that's true. But anyway, what's your thoughts on the monkey and Mr. Tim Flock, Tiger?
Well, it was just a gimmick at the time, and then, it was just like his brother, Foundy. Foundy Flock wore what do you call those, Bermuda shorts when you drive.
Yes, sir.
You know, so, you know, back in them days, you could do practically anything you wanted. And it was a real good gimmick. And I can't remember why he took the monkey back out of the car. I think something happened in a race, and then he didn't run the monkey no more.
How many races did Mr. Flock have the monkey in there with him, Tiger? Can you remember?
Well, the year when I saw him was 1955. That's all I can remember.
Okay. And one more question. I keep saying that, Tiger.
That's okay. That's all right. That's okay.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for paving the way for our sport that we call NASCAR, that myself and Steven really love, and Suzanne. I mean, you know, y'all paved the way for everything to be like it is today, which I know it's changed a lot, and it's changed a whole lot. Far as technical inspection, I know y'all didn't have to go through what the Sprint Cup Series has to now here. Can you sort of fill our fans in on what kind of tech y'all went through, or did y'all even have a tech where y'all had to go through?
Oh, yeah, we had a tech. We had the heads off the car. You know, we went to the racetrack, and they checked everything right there, the bore and stroke, and then we had to assemble the engine back up again. And it was pretty easy to cheat in them days because the engine was completely apart when you got there, so they didn't watch it too close when you put it back in there. And then they used to seal them. And halfway through the season, I found a seal, and I started sealing my own engines, what NASCAR didn't know about. See, there was a lot of tricks. There was a lot of tricks in them days, a lot of them. See, I'll give you a good example with Smokey Unick. When he came to Daytona that year with that Chevelle, they pulled a fuel cell out of the car, and he drove the car home, and nobody can understand how he drove that car with no fuel cell in the car. And we found out later that he had a gas line that was about 100 feet long rolled up underneath the seat, and it was full of gas. So then NASCAR, later years, they came up with a rule how long the gas line had to be. He wasn't cheating. There was just no rule on it. You know, the rules were made as we went along. And that's how the rules made it went along. See, like my 55 Chevrolet, I had Howard Johansson from California grind me a camshaft. We used to get a raw billet with the same serial number on the camshaft. And Howard made an M8 cam out of it. And Kyle Keekever couldn't understand why my car was so fast because, you know, with that Chrysler 300s. So when I went back to Daytona that year in 56, he was waiting for us. He had a cam graft machine there, you know, which we were not aware for. Most of us guys got caught with the cheating cam in there. You know, so that's how it all went in them days.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of guys used to have right in front and back of the grill, they used to have a snap where they used to have an old camshaft sitting there, a legal camshaft sitting there. When they pulled the old illegal camshaft out, they hand the inspector the other camshaft. You follow what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes,
so there's a lot of tricks done.
Yes, sir. And just to throw one more thing at you, and I'm going to hand you over to Stephen. Myself and Suzanne, we were in Atlanta. It was either 2000, 2001, and we got to hang out with Mr. Ashton Lewis Jr. You know, he drove back then with the Busch Series, so we got to watch him go through Tech, and I was watching the NASCAR, the Nationwide officials, when they was pushing the cars, once they come through Tech, what to call now the Room of Doom, Tiger, whenever the car would come out, once everything tested, there was a official on each side of the front of the car mashing it down and bouncing it. And I watched them do two or three cars like that. Well, I just asked one of the guys, I said, why do y'all do that once it comes through Tech? He said, well, Tim, he said, sometimes the teams will take wire ties and tie everything up, and then when they get on the track and they hit a bump, that wire tie break and it drops it.
Yeah, they used to have shear pins in the shocks. They used to have, or rocks or something like that. See, I always told NASCAR you should check the cars after they qualify, because that's when you could catch them. You know what I mean? And it was just like Darrell Waltrip once said. He was at North Wilkesboro. He went through Tech, and they used to park the car, you know, in turn one and turn two in the grass over there. And some of the cars, they found lead shot, and they found water. These guys would drain the frame rails because they used to fill them up with lead shock and water, you know, 200-300 pounds, because NASCAR never checked the cars after the race, you know, on the weight. You know, the only reason most of these guys got caught is because one of the mechanics, you get them mad and they go rat on you. That's the only reason you get caught. You know, I wouldn't call it cheating. I just call it, you know, bending the rule book. That's all I call it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Like, just like we sort of call it here in Talladega, pushing the envelope. Because there's a rule there. If it says should, you know, or shall, you know, we're going to push it. But anyway, Tiger, thank you very much, and don't be a stranger. I'm going to hand you over to Stephen, and you can stay on as long as you want to. I know Stephen has a ton of questions. So, Tiger, here's Stephen Wilson.
Yeah, let me go, Steve.
Hey, Tiger, this is Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. First question I have for you is that you were talking a little bit about how the guys would get caught cheating out there. Do you think that some of the reasons why NASCAR started hiring some of these crew chiefs and car chiefs and car builders for the R&D center and to write the rule books is because they know all the tricks of the trade, or do you just feel that it's just because of natural progression for some of these guys?
Well, it's like you see that TV series, to catch a thief, you have to hire a thief. You know, when they hired Gary Nelson, you know, racing changed. Gary knew all the cheating that was going on because he had a car that was so darn illegal, it was pathetic. And the worst part of the whole thing, Felix Zapata, when he came to the first race in Daytona, Gary knew everything that was on that car and got disqualified. You know, see, that's the bad part of it. And just like myself, In 1986, I had a Monte Carlo that Davy Ellison drove, and I was stupid. I just didn't realize it. The body was completely made out of aluminum, and the guy who did that was Sterling Marlin, and I can't remember his crew chief name, Ronnie Grayson. And when Davy and I went to Richmond that year, they were waiting for us because I didn't know that the car owner owed Sterling Marlin and Ronnie Grayson some money. So they were waiting for me. So when I got there, they disqualified me. And I begged Dick Beatty, I got to make this race. So he made me put panels over the whole body. We made complete panels, and we popped it on the body. And if you can remember that race in 1986 at Richmond, it was a bang fest race. You know, everybody was wrecking each other, and our car stayed in one piece because I had double sheet metal on my car. You know.
Yeah. So yeah, over the years, you know, a lot has changed in NASCAR. You know, with the construction of the cars, and a lot of it has been done in the name of safety. If there was one thing that you think you guys could take that you have, that these cars are running right now in the name of safety, and put it on some of the cars that you guys were running, what would it be?
Well, most of the guys we have no shoulder harness, and we had no you know, all we had was a seat belt and stock seats. You know, seats like you come out of a passenger car. Just like myself, when I wrecked at Daytona, my 60 Chevrolet, I went backwards into a car, and the rear of the car came into the front seat, and I ended up in the hospital because the seat folded down. And it's a good thing it did, you know. It was more or less like a cushion. It was like, so back then, we didn't have that kind of a, like they got today. And just like they were talking about today, this, I saw it on TV a little while ago, RaceHub, $15,000 for a helmet air conditioner. I could not believe when the guy said that. You know, I don't know what it's coming to. It doesn't make sense to me. They said they got fans inside the car, you know, keeping the driver's foot, you know, cool and all that stuff like that. You know, but you can't knock these guys. You can't, because, you know, it's just technology today. We just didn't know any better back then. We just raced the way the cars were.
And talking a little bit about that, do you think some of the drivers, you know, especially you coming through the series where you guys worked on the car week in and week out, and that's becoming less and less of a talent with these drivers, and they're more and more just going in there grabbing the steering wheel because they know how to drive. Do you feel that some of these drivers really need to go back to working on their cars to be better in the series?
100%. 100%. I say that, I've always said it. You know, I'll give you a good example, okay? Tony Bettenhauser at Indianapolis, Paul Russo, one of his friends, asked him to test his car, his Indy car. So Tony Bettenhauser went out there and tested his car, and he got killed. And the reason he got killed, the tie rod came off. They forgot to tighten the tie rod. And, you know, there's a lot of trust in these mechanics today, you know. Well, you have to have that, but personally, I think the mechanics, you know, not the mechanics, I think personally the drivers should take more look into their cars and find out what's going on and learn the fundamentals of the car. Like, they're always having tire issues. Okay, why don't they go find out why you got those tire issues? And hands-on was always better. You know, most of us drivers back in our day, we did everything. We build the motors, we build the rear ends, we build the transmissions. We knew our car, but I'm not saying that the drivers today don't know their cars. I'm just saying that they should be more hands-on.
And my final question that I have for you tonight is that you came out of Chicago, Illinois. It's not exactly known as a racing capital or much racing up in that area at all. How did you get involved into the sport of racing coming out of an area that's just not known for that?
Well, Soldiers Field, Andy Granatelli, he ran that from 1949 all the way up to 1956, he ran it. And it was pretty well known. Our first race up there was a police benevolent race that held over 100,000 people. And we had an average of 38,000 people per race because Andy Granatelli used to staged the races, you know, which we didn't know about till later on. He put a show on, and he made a book called Mr. 500, Andy Granatelli, and a lot of people ought to read that book. I had Bill France Sr. read it, and Humpy Wheeler read it, and a bunch of other promoters read it, and they learned a lot from that book because Andy Granatelli used to stage his races.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a lot of that, you know, you, as you know, if you read a lot of the history of NASCAR, a lot of that went on, you know, just to get those drivers out there. But I do appreciate you coming on the show tonight and talking about some of the stuff in NASCAR. I could listen to you all night and all along telling stories. And, you know, hopefully one day you'll get into the NASCAR Hall of Fame because you've been there, you've done it, and there's a lot of guys like you that really need to be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame before, you know, before an era like you guys are no longer around.
Well, thank you. I hope so, too.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm going to throw you back on over to Tim.
Okay.
Tiger, thanks again. And we will definitely love to get you back on. But I just want to read a little statement. You know, I sort of searched some of your stats. You know, I've been a NASCAR fan. I used to work for Mr. Enix Daly here.
I know him very well.
Here at Talladega. You know, back in the day, we used to get, you know, back in the early 80s when I was a teenager, we get to check out of school, you know, and get to set up in a Union 76 balls and all that. But, you know, we couldn't set up there during the race. But so, anyway, just want to throw out some of your stats. I've got your NASCAR stats. Over 11 years, 130 races, you had 2 wins, 29 top fives, 53 top tens, 5 poles. You ran 19,941 laps. And you led 797. And I want to apologize. I do not remember where your 2 wins were. Would you like to touch on that?
Yeah, it was Richmond, Virginia, and Martinsville, Virginia. I mean, Trenton, New Jersey, and Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. That's one of Stephen's
homes. And then I won the convertible race in 1959 at Martinsville.
Yes, I had seen that earlier.
We had 3 wins that year.
Yes, sir. And, Tiger, is there anything you want to put out about, I know you've got a little business going on. We give everybody time to talk about what they have going on. You got the floor, Tiger, to talk about some of your investment stuff you got going on if you want to.
Yeah, I got 2 real good people I just met from Hickory, North Carolina, Todd and Vincent Midas. They bought 2 cars off of me, and we're going to go testing this weekend. We're going to go testing with them, and I can't wait to do it. They bought 2 Legend cars, and that's what I've been involved with the Legend cars. I'd like to tell you a little story if you got time.
Yes, sir. You got all the time you want, Tiger.
I went to a birthday party. It was Laurie Banks' birthday party, and Leonard Wood was there, and Bill Yanisak I went with, and we met Gene Haas. I couldn't believe it. You know, he walked in there, and we sat down, and we started talking. And I never realized, you know, how old I was until I started talking to him. You know, and he started asking us questions about Daytona and NASCAR when they first started. I was shocked to hear that he didn't know nothing about it. And we started talking, and Leonard Wood started explaining to him all about pit stops and when NASCAR got started, and he just sat there and just kept asking questions. So it gave me a point. I still say, till today, somebody needs to start a show from the beginning, because a lot of people don't know the beginning, and they would like to hear the beginning, just like Gene, you know. And I used to have a show called Racing Now and Then, and that's what my show was about. We used to talk about the beginning and today. And Leonard Wood was so talkative, I couldn't believe it, the way he was explaining everything, you know, how NASCAR started, who Bill France Sr. was. And I think there's a big, big show should be put on for something like that there, Tim.
Yes, sir. And would you be interested in doing something like that, Tiger?
100%. Because
okay.
I never realized it, seriously, because, you know, Gene's maybe in his 50s. I'm 85. And I think he was born in 1955 or something like that, and he didn't know nothing about NASCAR. at the beginning. And it felt, you know, I felt stupid sitting there because I didn't know what kind of questions to ask him. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But it felt good to have him, you know, have him listen to us. And
yes,
I'll tell you something. I cannot believe what a gentleman that man is.
Really? Yeah.
Yep.
And Tiger, I'm gonna ask you again and make sure I heard you right, because you're a legend in our sport. Would you be interested in doing a radio show about some of back in the day stuff?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Steven, did you hear that?
There's not too many of us left now. Remember that? There's not too many of us that can talk about it. You know, like Leonard and Bud Moore, and there's very few of us. Junior Johnson, you know, that first started with NASCAR. You know, like I said, you guys need you need to hurry up because, you know, you're going back to the 1940s. You know,
I know it. Yes,
that's
sir.
A long time, and there's not too many of us left. I keep repeating myself.
Well, I do too, Tiger. Steven, did you hear what Tiger just said? I think we need to contact Tiger, email or cell phone. What do you think, Steven?
Yeah, that'd be cool. If you want to get with Tim Tiger and you know, maybe work some details out, maybe we can get something set up for you where you can talk about a little bit of this. You know,
yes,
there's
sir.
A lot of stories. There's a lot of stories, a lot of history. And, you know, I'm 31 years old, and most people would look at me and say, "Well, you don't know much about NASCAR. You haven't been around long enough." But I can tell you, I've been around long enough. I've been going to the racetrack for over 20 years. And
right.
I remember a lot of the guys that, you know, used to run, some of the guys that are there now. And I've learned a lot of history about NASCAR. And if you to really be good at what I do in the media, is you really have to know about the history of NASCAR. You know, talking about Jocko Flacco and some of the monkey in the car. And, in fact, I had to look that one up myself. I remembered Jocko Flacco being in the car. He was only in the car for three races. After an issue at Raleigh, North Carolina, is when they took him out of the car. But, yeah, I had to look that up. But, you know, if you start saying Jocko Flacco, nobody knows who that is. Nobody will realize. They'll be like, oh, well, who was that? It's like, it's not a who, it was a what.
No, you're right. I was a pallbearer for Tim Flock. You know, I was very close to him and his brother Fawny. They were good people. Yeah, there's a lot of great stories you could talk about. And like I say, Leonard Wood's a good one to talk to. He remembers most of that stuff.
Yes, sir. Now,
I got to meet Leonard one year at Martinsville Speedway. Just a super nice guy, super down to earth. You know, and you're right. You know, I got to ask him a couple questions about NASCAR, things that I always wanted to know about because he was there. And he's just a super nice, super down to earth. And definitely, you know, the stories that he has, it really needs to be told. And I don't think that they've all been told in the fashion that they should. You know, you take a look at TV and radio these days, and it's only just a small sliver of that story. You never get to see the whole story. And it'd be really nice to see guys like you, Rex White, you know, Leonard and Glenn, and all those guys out there really tell the story of how NASCAR started.
Well, they ought to tell exactly everything about it. You know, expose themselves. You know what I mean? Tell them how they cheated. There's nothing wrong with that. It's over with now, you know. I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed to tell.
Well, you know, just like you said, Tiger, it's not really cheating. It's pushing the envelope.
Pushing the envelope, right. Exactly. You hit it right in the head. You hit it right in the head.
Go ahead, Steve.
As they say, it's only cheating if you get caught.
Well, like I said, the only way you get caught is when somebody rats on you.
That was kind of like the what was it? The yellow submarine that Junior Johnson used to ride around with, and they told him not to bring it back to the track anymore.
Yeah, the banana car.
Yep.
The banana car. Yep. He's right there. They did to me. They done that to me with my 1964 Ford I had, because it was so darn chopped and channeled. They told me not to bring it back. You know how you get caught? See, we used to park next to those cars that were stock. And you look at Junior Johnson's car, you look at our cars, and we sit so low to the ground. See, that's where we made our mistakes. We should have went and parked next to where nobody could see it. You know, Junior Johnson can tell you some great, great, great stories. Junior can tell you. And so can Bud Moore.
Yes, Junior can tell some stories. I did get to go up there and have breakfast one morning with him before he sold his ranch out there in Yadkinville. But yes, he has some stories, and he can really tell you some stuff. Let me tell you. And I've never had a chance to meet Bud Moore or talk to him, but yeah, I'm sure he's got some funny stories out there too.
Quite a bit.
And it's always a shame that, you know, Smokey Yunick isn't still around, because I'm sure that he could tell.
Right.
He could put NASCAR to shame.
Exactly. Boy, if you could get Junior Johnson, you get Bud Moore, get Leonard Wood, and get those guys right there, and Humpy Wheeler, and Bruton Smith. Bruton Smith was here. He was here in the 40s and the 50s. Bruton Smith knows everything, you know. And you get those guys, and they'll tell you stories that you can never forget. If you get about 10 guys in a round table, that's what you need. And
well,
Bruton Smith likes to talk about that kind of stuff.
Well, Tiger, me and you will definitely talk, and we might can work something out. What do you think, Steven?
Yeah, we can probably work something out and probably do a little show one night and get all these, see how many guys we can get on. It'd be nice to talk to them all and let the fans hear some of the stories of definitely back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s and how NASCAR really came around.
Right, exactly. I really like
are
to know.
Steven, we could let Tiger have his own show. If he'd be willing to do that, we've got a couple of extra spots, hadn't we?
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of extra spots. If he's willing, he wants to do a little series on his own, you know, that would be cool with me to get some of these guys on.
Yeah, right. See, the show I had was called Racing Now and Then, which was a good show. Bill Yanisek was the guy who put it together.
Well,
yeah,
cool.
We're still trying to do it.
Well, now Tiger, I'm serious. I'll put you over back in the screening room with my darling wife Suzanne and let her give you my contacts and we can talk and let her give you Steven's contacts and if you want to have a show one night, I don't have a problem, and I know Steven don't.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, we could do that.
Okay. And any last thoughts, Tiger?
No, you got any more questions?
I'm sort of like Steven. I'm 44, and I've listened to a lot of stuff back in the day. I've met David Pearson. You know, like I said, I met Cotton Owens. I've met Junior Johnson. I've met a lot of them, and just love listening to the stories. And that would be a great radio show for you to come on our network, if it's okay with Steven, and do like a roundtable. That way, some of these up-and-coming NASCAR fans that don't, you know, just like you and Steven said, don't know about how y'all paved the way for the sport, and we'll take care of everything.
Have a call in.
Yes, sir. You won't have to pay for nothing. Myself and Steven will take care of the show.
Okay, let me know.
Okay, I'm going to throw you back over in the screening room, Tiger. Don't hang up. I'll put you back with Suzanne, and she'll give you my contact info and Steven's.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. God bless, bud.
All right.
Steven, I hated to do that on the air, on the, you know, national radio, but I've seen the opportunity, so maybe that'll work out. That would be really cool, having Tiger having his show on your network and bringing in some of the old school guys.
Yeah, I think I would. I think you're running that as like a little mini series or something like that, and get some of these guys on there. It'd be a great opportunity for the fans out there that have not been able to hear some of these guys. You know, they've heard their names, but they really haven't heard their stories. And there's a lot of cool stories. And like I said, you know, I've met Glenn Wood at Martinsville, Virginia, several years back. And I've had a chance to ask him a few questions. He's got a lot of cool stories out there. I've also got to meet the 1960 NASCAR champion and NASCAR Hall of Famer Rex White on multiple occasions, and you just wouldn't believe some of the stories that these guys really have, you know, talking about the things that they did where they were running five, six days a week. You know, some of them were running, you know, as many as 70 or 80 races a year. You take a look at the King Richard Petty, and people will say, well, can he ever be beat in his 200 wins? And, you know, I always tell people, no, that'll never happen, because you've got to realize one thing. Richard Petty was going to 60 or 70 races a year and showing up to these events, and then we've got 36 races where the same 43, 44 drivers show up every single week. But back when he was coming along and he was going to 70 races a year, he was one of the only few that were showing up 60, 70 times a year. So, no, you'll never beat that 200 record. But people just don't realize that when you start telling them about how many races these guys really did run back in the 60s and 70s and 50s out there. And it just really amazes them that they haven't heard the stories. And, you know, Speed TV and Fox Sports One now have done an excellent job as far as trying to highlight some of this stuff over the years. But it really needs to be a concentration, especially with the NASCAR Hall of Fame, you know, up and running. They've been around for about 4 years now, that, you know, these stories need to be told. It's like they always say about the guys that fought in World War II, that dropped into Normandy, things like that. Those guys won't be around forever. When their stories are gone, they're gone. That's it. So now is the time to get those stories out, get them heard to the people out there, and you would be really amazed. So like I said, some of the stories, and as I was talking with Tiger, you know, I had the chance to sit in with Junior Johnson at his farm in Yadkinville, North Carolina, one morning. And he was always famous for, if you ever wanted to talk to Junior, show up at his farm at 6:30 in the morning, and he'd be glad to talk to you, and he'd have breakfast ready to go. But, you know, people haven't had that opportunity, and I think now is the time to have that opportunity for the fans to hear these stories.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, you know, just like you just touched on, and just like Tiger touched on, you know, if we're going to do it, we need to do it now, you know, because Tiger's 81. He's just saying if we want to do it, we need to do it now. You know, while we still got Bud Moore, got all the back-in-the-day people, and just like Tiger said, have a little sit-down, round table, and if he wants to do his own show, I'm behind him. I'm sure you are. And if he don't, you know, and if he don't want to do it every week, you know, we can call him, help him, and schedule whatever time and whatever day, you know. I know, you know, you've got a few days open, and whenever he can get around to getting some people to sit down, like you said, this would be a great time to introduce the forefathers of NASCAR that paved the way. I'm probably repeating myself again, just like Tiger said, that paved the way for all of these young generations. And, you know, back in the day, like you said, they had to work on the car, and they had to do everything, and they raced eight nights a week, and eight days a week, and not 7 days in a week. They raced anywhere they can to make money, to pay for bills, to eat. And I'm like you, Stephen, and just like Tiger said, he agreed to do whatever that we wanted to do. And I think that's a big step that we need to take to get the message out to this younger generation that are sitting there on their iPhones that don't know nothing about your Tim Flocks and the monkey that was in the car, your Cotton Owenses, your Fireball Robertses, and, you know, myself and yourself, we've read about them, we've studied on them, but as media, it tends to go as they want to hear some of the old stuff, but just like me and you come on the show talking, we're focusing on what happened this past weekend at Richmond, the Chase Grid. What's going on at Chicagoland Speedway next week? There's not that many people that are focusing on back in the day to where the sport started and to the pavers of the sport that got the sport to where it is now.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah, getting him and getting some of the forefathers of the sport on, I think he had a great idea for getting some of these guys on there. You know, definitely you talk about Humphrey Wheeler, you talk about Britton Smith. I mean, a lot of people, you know, think of Britton Smith, and they say, oh, God, he owned Charlotte Motor Speedway. But nobody realizes that in the 1950s, Britton Smith started a side series to NASCAR to compete against NASCAR right out of the dirt fields there in North Carolina, ran the series in Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, all over the place. And it was getting fairly popular, and a lot of people don't realize is that Bruton Smith was drafted in the Army to Korea. And if it wouldn't have been for that fact, NASCAR might have had something definitely that they would have had to contend with up until this day. But those are stories that you just don't hear a whole lot. And it would be good to hear from the people that were there and really you know, were there on the ground during that time and really put the series together. NASCAR, the way that we run, you know, week in and week out. Talk about the technological changes. I mean, you took it the Wood Brothers, for example. They were the forefathers of the modern-day pit stop, and most people don't know that. In the 1970s, they were asked by Ford Motor Company to come to Indianapolis Motor Speedway and car that won the race because they changed the way and the evolution of the how pit stops were done. But those are things that people just haven't heard about. They think that, you know, the pit stop has been the same for the last 60 years of NASCAR, and it hasn't. You take a look at the way it was, and you look at what the Wood Brothers did there in the 60s and, you know, winning the race there in Indianapolis Motor Speedway because they changed the evolution of it. And those are all the stories out there that really definitely need to be told, you know, before these guys are long gone.
Yeah, amen, Steve. And, you know, back whenever Trevor Bayham won the Daytona 500, don't get me lying, I can't remember what year. I mean, you know, I'm a –
that was 2011.
I was going to say 2000. Thank you very much, Steve. I mean, you know, to see that iconic Wood Brothers number 21 going into victory lane, I mean, you know, that right there just, you know, pops a lot of eyes open. And I was not a big fan of Trevor Bayham, which I'm a fan of every race car driver, you know, like I've always said. But that right there, that really touched my heart to see that number 21 forward of the Wood Brothers going to victory lane in the Daytona 500.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you take a look at the Wood Brothers. They are the only continuous NASCAR operating team that has won in all 7 decades that they have competed in the NASCAR Cup Series, Sprint Cup Series, as it is now. They're the oldest continuing Cup Series team out there that are still in operation and will be in operation into the future. They put a lot of people in their cars. You take a look at David Pearson, you take a look at Cale Yarborough, you take a look at all the guys that have come before and got put in that car and went on to have great careers. And those are things that people would like to hear. I think there's a lot of stories out there. I would love to hear some of Cale Yarborough's stories. I've never had the chance to hear them. I've gotten to hear some of the Allisons, like Bobby and Donnie Allison stories. They've got some great stories out there, but we can keep harping on this all night. Now is the time before these guys are gone, and when they're gone, they're gone.
Yes, sir. And I am definitely going to get in touch with Tiger Tom, and I'll let you know what all is going on. But at this time, we've got driver of the number 25. I'm probably going to mess this up. I ain't good with words. Zulop Toyota for Venturini Motorsports, 5th in points in the ARCA Racing Series. Mr. Justin Boston. Let's bring Mr. Justin Boston on, Stephen.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Justin, how you doing tonight, my friend? You're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson on Speedway Digest Radio Network.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Justin. And I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule. And I'm gonna let Stephen have you, and we've got my good friend Tony B. He is a former Indy 500 champion crew member, and I'm gonna hand you over to Stephen and let him ask you a couple of questions, and then we're gonna let Tony B. have you, if that's okay, bud.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, 10-4. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Justin, Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. First question that I have for you tonight is, you've come up through the series and you've been running the ARCA series and you made your debut in the truck series this year. How do you feel that that's helped you progress throughout your career, starting in the lower ranks and work your way up, especially with a team like Venturini Motorsports that has such a high iconic history in the motorsports world?
Well, I mean, it's helped me immensely as a race car driver for sure. And, you know, everybody gets their start in different series, different type of car. You got some guys that start on dirt, you know, and midgets. Some guys start on asphalt and legend cars or bandoleros. I mean, there's really not one path to racing to make it up the ladder. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in motocross, and I didn't get much time in a stock car before I'd gotten to Venturini Motorsports. And when I had gotten my opportunity to race full time, I had to take it. And Venturini Motorsports, I can't say enough about those guys and everybody. I have a close relationship with Billy and Kathy and Big Bill Venturini and everybody over there. It's a top-notch organization, and to have the people that they have in ARCA. It's a really top-notch organization to be a part of, and it's really progressed me as a race car driver. When I got through their doors, I didn't really know, you know, how to put a race together, and they taught me pretty much everything I know so far. And, you know, it's turned into a lot of success, and I feel like I'm a lot different race car driver this year than I was the beginning of last year, and I think every race that we run, we're getting faster and faster, and this year is proof of that. You know, we went to a lot of tracks last year the first time, and now we're going to tracks the second, third, fourth time, and seems like we're, you know, we're up there pretty much every week, and we're battling for wins, and we've contended pretty much everywhere we've gone. And it was really unfortunate for us that we had such a slow start to the year, and I think, you know, if circumstances had played out a little differently for us on this Loop 25 Toyota Camry, it would have been a three-man battle for the championship. And I think if you ask anyone in the garage over in the ARCA series, it's been the 25 and the 98 and now the 90. Grant made a change in teams, but it's been really, you know, a couple guys all year that have been a threat minus, or should I say plus some other guys that have come in from other series. You know, we've put some really good races together, and I'm really looking forward to what the rest of the year has in store for us.
And you talked a little bit about how you came over from motocross. What do you feel is the biggest learning curve that you've had to learn coming from that motocross career over into stock cars, and definitely working with somebody like John West Talley, who's been in NASCAR in motorsports stock car racing for some time? How much has he helped you with that learning curve, being there a veteran in motorsports?
You know, to be honest, I've leaned on Brennan Poole a lot more than other drivers in the organization. And I've leaned on a lot of other drivers at the Venturini camp at certain times, but Brennan Poole's been pretty much behind me since I got there, and we've gotten to be close friends. So last year he played a big role in getting me up to speed, and this year, you know, I haven't really leaned on much of the other drivers for as far as driving the tracks goes and stuff, but we've definitely leaned on each other as far as what we're feeling in the race cars and what we can do to collectively be faster at each and every track on any given weekend.
And going to some of the racetracks that you've already been to, does that boost your confidence now that you've already been to them one time? And is there any tracks that are coming up throughout the rest of the year that you feel like that you just don't have enough experience on, that you may need to learn a bit more and get a little bit of extra practice on to feel like you're comfortable at the track?
I mean, there's definitely tracks where you'd always want to have more practice. And I think the only track this year that I would like to have a little bit more seat time was Bristol in the truck. That was actually the first time I'd ever been in a truck was for practice. And practice actually got shortened, and I felt like we could have had a lot better result there. And I felt like we could have ran definitely a little bit more competitively in the beginning of the race if I had gotten a little bit more seat time in the truck. And, you know, you've got to deal with the cars you've been dealt and make the most of it. And I was thrilled to make my first truck start at Bristol, but I got three more truck races at the end of this year. And, you know, I got some other stuff that's in the works right now, so I'm really excited. And I'm ready to go contend for top 10s, top 5s, and wins, and see where we stack up against the competition. And, you know, the goal right now is to go win races in ARCA and try and get as many trophies as we can the rest of this year and get Zalup in victory lane and, you know, everybody that's been a part of this organization that's put me behind the wheel.
And my last question, and I'm going to throw you back over to Tim here in just a second. You know, taking a look at your career so far in the ARCA series, and you've made, as you said, you made your truck series debut there at Bristol, a couple more races coming this year in the truck series. What do you feel is your natural progression as far as moving out of a full-time ARCA ride into a full-time truck series ride?
You know, that's a good question. I feel like you got to move up. You know, we're looking at a lot of options for next year, and my goal as a race car driver is to be as competitive as possible and move up and try and contend, you know, in the next level. And I want to make it to the top, you know, and I'm sure you have a lot of other drivers that say that too, but I'm here to contend for wins. And, you know, I'm not ready to move up unless I'm contending for wins at the level I'm at. And I'm fortunate to have great sponsorship behind me with Zaloop, Jayco Environmental, REI, Detour Sunglasses, PRC. I have a lot of people behind me. Venture Union Motorsports, you know, I've been able to take my time and not be rushed, so to speak, and be put in positions that I'm not comfortable with. And as a race car driver, that's invaluable because I feel like a lot of guys come up to the ranks and, you know, you get rushed and you get put in rides you're not quite ready for mentally. And, you know, I feel like we've contended pretty much everywhere we've been at this year in the ARCA Racing Series. So, you know, I definitely see some more ARCA races in my future. But as far as full-time, I'm hoping to put some stuff together for next year to go race in some other series. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the works for me. And really, the book's wide open. And I think a truck ride would be fantastic, but all doors are open right now, and you know, we're going to entertain as much as we can and try and put me on the track as much as possible and really see where we stack up and try and make it to the top.
All right, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Good luck throughout the rest of the year in the ARCA Series and the Kink World Truck Series there, and I'm going to throw you back over to Tim.
Thanks.
Okay, Justin, this is Tim to Spain, Pit Stop. You've been in the ARCA Series now for 2 years, and I've run some stats today, and this is after Event 17, Southern Illinois, 100% of a federated care. Car Care, DeQuoin State Fairground, DeQuoin, Illinois. I'm just old redneck, Justin, so hang in there with me. But after 2 years, you've run 38 races. You've had two wins, 15 top fives, 27 top tens, and four poles. You've run 4,484 laps, and you've led 360 of them. And I want to give you a big shout-out for just 2 years of that. Do you think you're where you're at in your career right now that you'd like to be, which I know you'd like to be in Cup, you know, who wouldn't, but do you think you're following in the footsteps where you think you need to be for us right now, bud?
I feel like there's some pieces that need to be put in place for sure. The last thing I want to do is hop in a car that I don't feel like I have a chance to run competitively in. And, you know, I feel like as far as the development and the people behind me, I feel like I have the resources to run competitively wherever we choose to go. And, you know, it's proven that we've had results this year and last year in ARCA. Last year is my first year in an ARCA car and really my first year full time. It was like my 15th stock car start. So if you look at everybody else's statistics for how many times they've been in the stock car, I'm at the lower end of everybody else as far as amount of races and time in a stock car. So I feel like we've done a lot with a little as far as track time and experience is concerned. And, you know, I've been a student the past 2 years and learned as much as I can off of everybody that I can talk to. And, you know, I've turned out, I feel like, pretty good. So just trying to go and show everybody we can do it and contend. But I feel like if you're going to move up to the top series, you're going to have some serious affiliation. And that's just what you got to do is be affiliated with the top team and if not run for a top team. And, you know, the rides are scarce and there's a lot of great drivers out there. So I'm just trying to take my time and develop my skills and try and make something out of it and move on up when the time's right.
10-4, bud. Congrats on where you've made it now, and we wish you the best. And we're going to hand you over to my good friend Tony B. He's a former Indianapolis 500 champion crew member with Dario Franchini when he won the 2011. Tony, let me mess it up. 2011 Daytona 500. He was a front tire changer. But Stephen, do you have any last words for Justin before we hand him over to Tony?
No, I just thanks for coming on the show tonight, and like I said, good luck throughout the rest of the year in the ARCA and the truck series that you got lined up for the rest of the year.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Stephen, I know Justin Stephen has to get off because he runs SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, thank you very much, and I'm going to stay on with Justin and Tony, and I'll talk at you later, bud.
All right, bud. Y'all have a good night, and I'll talk with y'all next week.
10-4, bud. That's my good friend. CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Stephen Wilson. Okay, Justin, we want to bring my good friend on. And I love playing songs. I love mashing buttons. my good friend Tony B. We're going to bring him in.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Tony B., how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, TD. How you doing? How you doing, Justin?
How's it going?
It's going good. I'm looking over, only spending a couple years and only talking how long you've been in a stock car. I'm very impressed. Part of my background comes for well over 10 years. I was National Safety Director for the American Speed Association, and we graduated just about everybody to NASCAR. So I've seen stock car racing at its best, and we were a good series like ARCA. And I think you've got a lot to do, and you've done a lot, and things are looking good. I know my show host loves the Kimmels, but I'm looking at the points, and I think you could head right up there to number three. Aren't you pretty good at Salem Speedway, Justin?
That place has been pretty good to me. I'll put it this way. Our starting position's good. I think we need to finish one out there. I would like to get a win there. We've qualified on the pole every time I've ever been there, so it's been a good track for me. I would just like to put some pen to paper there. We haven't had the most luck in the races, but we definitely have a lot of speed, that's for sure.
Did you, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm getting old, I'm 52 now, but I'm recollecting and thinking of Winchester when you ran there. Didn't you have problems and still run very well?
Yeah. The high banks have been pretty good to me. And, we actually got spun out on lap zero, I believe. It wasn't even lap one.
I believe
yet.
So.
And we made it one corner, and then the next corner I was doing 360s. So, yeah, we ran third that day. So we passed actually every race car on the racetrack. And almost won it. We got close there, and Brandon took home the trophy that day, but we were close, that was for sure, and it was a good day. I think it was a fun race to run, to come back through the field like that at a short track. It was pretty cool.
Well, Salem is much like Winchester, and it's my understanding that they've paved 3 and 4 at Salem, but not 1 and 2. So I think your crew chief is going to have a little bit of thinking to do, and you'll see the best of Venturini Motorsports making that car run on both ends.
Yeah, and we have a really good package there, and, it shows because we have great speed when we go to Salem, and really everywhere we go, I can't say enough about the Venturini organization and how much speed we've had this year. I feel like the 25 as a group and as a team has been, the team that everyone's had to beat pretty much each and every week. And it seems like there's been teams that might have been a little better than us on a certain week. But when it comes down to the race, we've usually been up front and contending, and Salem's no different. And, really you set up your race car for 1 and 2 at Salem. And
uh-huh.
3 and 4, you're just holding on and really praying. I mean, you're just hauling the mail through 3 and 4, and since it's gotten smoother, I really don't know how much it's going to change. And we didn't get the opportunity to test this week, and a lot of other teams did. And from what I've heard and what I've gathered is that it's not really that much different. The only difference is that you're going to be able to run a little bit lower and make some more stuff happen. So I'm excited about that, because 3 and 4 was pretty much a wash, and the only places you could pass was out of 2. And, if
right.
You're way better than somebody, you could maybe make a pass out of 4. But, I'm excited. I think it's going to make the track racier, and I think it's going to provide for a better show for the fans.
Well, that's definitely something to look forward to. Salem Speedway always puts on a good event. And I have been there and in charge of many events through my career with ASA. So it's not changed much, and neither has Winchester. And what do you have left on your schedule after Salem?
I have we're running this Loop 150 at Kentucky. We have three more truck races, and Kansas in the ARCA car as well. And I actually have some other stuff that we're actually going to be announcing pretty soon in the coming week. So we have some more races for this year, and don't count us out at any of them. We're going to run the last three ARCA races, and we have a good shot everywhere. I really feel like we are going to contend at every single one, and we had success in the past at Salem. I just would like to get the result we really deserved over the past year and a half there, and we've qualified well there, and we've had a lot of speed every time we've showed up to the racetrack. I would just really like to put some pen to paper and get it done there. That would be a special one for me for sure, because that's where I got my first pole, and I like that
pole.
Track.
Yeah, it's a very good track. From back in the day, I remember pit road to be a little bit of a challenge, but
compared to some of these tracks we go to, it's a cakewalk on pit road. There we go to Berlin is one that I can think of that's really crazy. It's basically pitch dark and you're pitting there, so.
Yeah, I can remember back in the day being at Berlin and Ted Musgrave running me, and I had to jump a fence to keep him from running over me. That was back in the day, you know. Ted Musgrave ran ASA and had an awesome career and finished in trucks. And I really look forward to you being in a truck. And with what team are you looking forward to doing truck racing? Is it going to be with Venturini or?
The door's wide open right now, and the goal is to, you know, put us in a competitive of a situation as possible. And, you know, we have a very close relationship with the Venturinis, and, you know, we're both looking at running some truck. Well, we're running the last three truck races of the year together, and the book's wide open for next year for sure. And we're going to see where the next three take us in the truck series, and hopefully we can build some success and really try and just gain some momentum, because I really feel like we're going to run some truck races next year for sure. And, you know, I don't know if or I will be full-time in the series, but I think as many races as I can run as possible, it's definitely not going to hurt. And if we got the means to do so, we would definitely will and try and get good results at each and every event.
Absolutely. And I see you're from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yep. Yeah, I was born and raised in Baltimore, and I actually relocated to Charlotte about 5 years ago to pursue racing. So I've there's not many drivers that have come out of Maryland. I don't know many other ones, but it's cool to
be
one of you guys.
That was quite a race, but I sure enjoyed being at the ballpark. But the street races for the IndyCar League when I was with them were really something.
Yep. I know Maryland has a lot of dirt tracks, and so does Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is huge for dirt racing. But,
absolutely.
As far as the stock car realm goes, I don't know of many guys that have made it, you know, into the NASCAR ranks. I've heard of a couple guys from Delaware and some on the Eastern Shore, and, you know, Martin's from New Jersey, and there's a couple guys from that area. But as far as Baltimore is concerned, I don't know many other guys.
I don't either. I was the first name that come to ring was Bentley Warren, but I believe he was from Maine. But he never made it as big as you are, and but he sure was a good sprint car pilot and won some little 500s and did quite well. Have you ever run a sprint car?
I would love to, but no, I have not. I would love to drive anything, and I've had some success on the dirt in the ARCA car, and it just makes me want to go run a dirt late model or something. You know, I would really want to run anything, and I can tell you my parents would say no, as far as sprint cars is concerned with how much has happened
yes.
this year. But, you know, it's it'd be a lot of fun for sure. And I would definitely, before I hang my helmet, want to run some dirt races and something.
How did you finish at DuQuoin?
We finished second. We were battling with Grant for the win and finished second.
That's awesome. You know, there's a lot of history that goes back with DuQuoin. And, you know, a very close friend of mine and somebody I look forward to sponsoring, Shane Cockrum, won the Ted Horn 100 and the Silver Crown car with USAC. And he also, he runs an ARCA car.
He was running the ARCA race at DuQuoin, I believe, too.
Yes, he was, yeah. And yep. I believe it's a 71 ARCA car.
Yep. Yep.
But I just wondered how the track fit into your do I need more stagger? Did you have push? Did the tracks slick it in hard and quick? How did things work out for you on the dirt?
Springfield was a monkey wrench for sure with how much it rained. And, you know, Springfield, we ran pretty decent last year, and that was my first dirt race ever on four wheels. But I can't say it's even close to two wheels, but I at least know when I went into my first couple races on the dirt, I knew how the dirt acted, and I knew how to search for lines, and I knew what to look for in the dirt, so to speak. So I was a little bit of a leg up just knowing from motocross how the dirt worked, but I really had no clue what to expect going into it. And it seems like we've had some success on the dirt, and, you know, we've ran in the top 10 at every dirt race and finished second and finished third at DuQuoin last year. So I felt like track was – it actually held up pretty good. I mean, I thought the track was going to dry out and it was going to chunk up really bad, and it actually held up pretty decent at DuQuoin. And Springfield was really, really wet, and that held up really good for sure. But I had never raced on a track that wet before. So, you know, last year both tracks were dry slick, and – Springfield was the one out of every race I ran on the dirt that was definitely a lot different for me. And, you know, that just comes with seat time on the dirt and knowing how to run those races in different track conditions. And it seems like we run pretty good on the dry slick, and that's what DuQuoin was. And we had a good run there this year. So I want to go run some more dirt races for sure.
Awesome, man. I love that ARCA still does that. I think that's very good. With the Camping
I can tell
World
you it's
Truck
a lot of fun.
Series. Yes, absolutely. And with the Camping World Truck Series running in Eldora, I really look for NASCAR with either the Nationwide Series or Sprint Cup themselves to step back and draw those fans and those kind of people that like the dirt. And, you know, I'm 52, and when I was a kid, and I got to go watch the racing, USAC had stock cars, and everybody ran stock cars. And, you know, and they ran on the dirt. So I don't see anything wrong with that. One thing I'm looking at for you, Justin, is I think without too much trouble at all, you ought to be able to take Tom Hessert out. And possibly Frank Kimmel and get you a top three after winning. You were Rookie of the Year last year, correct?
Yes, sir. We were Rookie of the Year last year, and that was actually a tight battle with Mason. We had a lot of fun at the end of the year. We were behind considerably to him, and then we put – a really good string of races together and actually ended up winning it. So that was pretty cool. That was a lot of fun to run last year and battle for Rookie of the Year. But I think it'd be cool to run, you know, pick up a couple more positions for sure. But I think what's more important right now is to run well and to try and win races. And I would definitely like to win at least one more. I want to win them all, but
yeah, absolutely.
You got to put yourself in position to win races, and that's what we didn't do the first half of the year. You know, you got to be at lap 200 to win lap 200, and that's what we were sitting on the infield half of the races this year in the first 10. So, you know, it was really a shame we got put in such a big hole. And, you know, I feel like we're championship caliber team as of right now. You know, I feel like we're putting really good runs together, and I feel like, you know, if things had played out a little different, we'd, you know, be in a lot better position for that. But we're trying to win races, and that's what we're going to go try and do this weekend in Salem.
Yes, and I have watched you run, and I have to hand it to you. Mason Mitchell and Grant Enfinger are great race car drivers, but so is Justin Boston. And I have seen your equipment work well. I've seen you drive good races. And, you know, the bottom line is that there's a lot to drive in a stock car. You got to, you know, manage your fuel. You got to watch your tires. You know, the bottom line is you can get a pit stop, and if you don't run the car right, you can wear out a new set of tires so quick that you're not there in the end. And your pit strategy and the people that you work with, you've got a great pit crew, and I look for great things for you. And I may have to be in attendance to Salem.
Well, definitely. Just let us know. I would love to have you there. I think we're going to have some fun there. I think it's going to be a good race, and I think it's going to be a really good show for the fans with how they've changed 3 and 4. I don't really know what to expect. I'm just going to go off the notebook I have in my head from the last 3 there, and that seems to work pretty well. So I'm going to try and repeat, you know, what I've done before and try and see what the track will take and basically relearn 3 and 4. Every time I've come there, it's been a little bit – you have to drive the track a little bit different anyways every time you come there, because turns 1 and 2 has been coming up and there's been a lot of asphalt tearing apart. So you've actually had to run the track. I've basically had to run a different line every time I've gone there, just by a little bit, just so you could miss some of the asphalt chunks that were coming up off the track.
Exactly. And I hate to say it, but it's been that way for years. And but it happens quick there. And you got to be on top of your game. You got to take care of your car. And how many lap show is it?
It's a 200 lap show, I believe. I think it's going to be under the lights too, Saturday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night.
Awesome. Well, that'll be a good event for you, and you know, you just got to take care of the car and get to the end. And I think that's going to be very exciting and good to watch. And would you like to talk about your sponsors and give a head out to Venturini Motorsports and just let everybody know that's listening what Justin Boston is about, and who you're with, and let's help them as we go.
Yeah, I had mentioned some of them briefly earlier. Zaloop Racing is a computer – well, Zaloop – it's not Zaloop Racing. That's our race team. But Zaloop Computer Electronic Recycling Centers is an electronic recycling center that basically will recycle anything with a battery attached to it or a cord attached to it. And it's end-of-life recycling. They're not taking these computers, laptops, cell phones, and, you know, they're not throwing them in a dumpster, and they're also not trying to resell them. They're taking them apart and separating these items for their raw materials and recycling it to be reused in new products.
Fantastic.
So it's a really good program, and it's a really good company to know about and want to recycle your computers with. It's really an investment in protecting our earth, and it's a great company, and I'm proud to represent them on the track for sure. And Venturini Motorsports, I really can't say enough about them. I've been with them for a year and a half, and when I got there, you know, they gave me a steering wheel and said, you got to relearn how to drive, pretty much. And, you know, when I got in their doors, I didn't know really. I knew how to go fast, but I didn't know how to go fast for 200 laps, and I didn't know how to manage races, and that's what they've taught me how to do. And, you know, the biggest person that I think helped me be better at that was Brennan Poole, and we've gotten to be really close friends. And, you know, we race against each other still, and we're to the point where we race hard against each other every week, and, you know, we have a lot of bragging rights on the line, and it's to the point where we run each other. And, you know, I'm to the point with where I'm at as far as the driver is concerned, and we get to run against each other each and every week, and he's been in stock cars a lot longer than I have, so I feel like that's a lot of fun, and it's really cool to be able to go run against him. And, you know, we're really competitive with each other, and I think if you had watched Pocono earlier in the year, you saw that. He's really a good race car driver, and he's an excellent race car driver at Pocono, so I was pretty happy to be able to keep him within a couple car lengths of me. And
Pocono's a big track and got a lot of turns.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it was we were set to go 1-2 there. You know, we were going to decide it between the both of us, so the caution come out. I think he would have edged me if the race had gone green, which, well, it did. And we the way we gambled and the way we ran that race, we finished fourth and fifth. And, you know, we shouldn't have finished fourth and fifth. We just got beat on strategy, and the way the weather played out, it just didn't work in our favor. And as a team, mm-hmm. we lost that one for sure. But, you know, I have a lot of great people behind me. And, you know, Zaloop has been the one there since day one. So I really got to give them a shout out. And they've been behind me and letting me take my time and develop my talent, so to speak.
Very, very good. And, how do you feel when Schrader shows up? And, you know, do you get many other guys that, you know, Schrader's not running in Sprint Cup right now, but do you get many Sprint Cup drivers down to join you?
I think we had one. Kyle came down, and I really don't – that doesn't affect me whatsoever when they come run. If anything, I like it because I'm going to have to race against them sooner or later. So if it's in an ARC race, it doesn't really faze me. I want to compete against those guys, and I want to be able to beat them. And that's what every competitive race car driver wants to do. So whenever you got guys like that coming down, and Schrader's, you know, he's been running pretty decent this year. I felt like they were a little bit more competitive last year or so, and as well as Frank. I think Frank's been getting a lot better the past couple weeks, but as a collective group this year, I think Frank was a bigger threat to win races last year overall than this year. And I enjoy running with those guys. They run you clean and they run you hard, and that's how you're expected to race. And, you know, you get a lot of people that come in these cars and they don't run you the right way. And, you know, it's cool to go bang fenders, but it's another thing to hook someone in the right rear and send them in the fence, and it's another thing to end someone's day on lap five. So I think they run you really hard, and they run you really clean, and I respect that.
Yeah, and no wonder your mom doesn't want you in a sprint car.
Yeah.
You hook somebody in a sprinter, open wheel, and you get to visit places you never knew existed. And Tim, you got any questions for Justin?
Well, I just want to congratulate him, Tony, on what he's done. I mean, you know, in this small amount of time that he's been in, that he's been behind a stock car. I want to thank him.
Well,
I want to thank Justin too for coming on, and you know, and Justin, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm real good friends with Will Kimmel. So
I like
don't
Will
throw
a lot. That's not an insult
okay,
whatsoever.
Okay. Don't throw daggers at me. Yeah. And I think Tony, was it last week that we had Justin's good friend, Brennan, on? Was it last week we had Brennan Poole on? I can't remember. Everything's going so fast. I think we had Brennan Poole on last week, didn't we?
It could have been, yes.
I think we did. Yeah. But, you know, Justin, I really don't have any questions. I want to thank you for taking the time out, for coming on with myself and Stephen Wilson and Tony B. And I heard him say, you know, you got to thank all your sponsors and everything. And I think I seen you here in Talladega, but I was so daggum busy. But I will definitely meet you next year when y'all come to Dega in the spring.
That sounds good. I really appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun talking with you guys. And, you know, let me know. I'd love to come on and talk in the future. Just let me give me a shout.
Okay.
I'd love to do this again. I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks to everyone.
Love having the Young Guns on.
Justin, you're very welcome. We'll get you on with Tony B after you move up to the third spot, like he said.
That sounds good, guys.
All right. Thanks again, bud.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
You
too. All right, bud. You too. All right, Tony B. That was Justin Boston. He's running fifth in the points, and I got a little sheet here. This is point standings after event 17 from the coin. He had 17 starts this year, 2 wins, 7 top fives, and 11 top tens. And like you said, he's got a shot at Tommy Hessert, maybe Frank Kimmel, but run for the championship probably going to be Grant Enfinger and Mason Mitchell. You know, we had Grant on last week.
Yeah, and the bottom line is Grant has drawn within 20 points of tying Mason Mitchell for first place, and as the races come down, Grant Enfinger did well at Winchester, and I'm sure he'll do well at Salem. And so will Mason, and it's going to be some racing to watch with Justin being a young gun and running as good as he runs in the Z-Loop car. Very, very good. And Venturini Motorsports is really putting him in a good position to further themselves in the ARCA standings.
Yeah, and I would totally agree, Tony. And, you know, I sort of Googled Venturini Motorsports earlier, you know, which I've known them, you know, known about them for a long time. And, you know, Justin's a real good driver there. And there's been a lot of big-name drivers that have come up through the ranks. And from USAC, Silver Crowns, like where you're talking about, dirt racing, coming up through everything, and they've come up through Venturini Motorsports that have made it big. And
yes,
I can't remember
absolutely.
The names. I can't remember the names. But anyway, Tony, I have not heard from Tina. I did not. I sent her I throw the big thing out. I don't know if she's coming on or not. But is there any last thoughts that you want to throw out there before we end everything about everything that you and Paul Cleveland have going on?
Just brace yourself. Is moving forward very, very good. Thanks to Paul Cleveland from Australia. And we are SFI approved, and we're out to help people and be safer and give them peace of mind to drive hard and do good and have the safety device to protect the head and neck with brace yourself. And, we are getting ready to go do some World of Outlaw racing. And then the 4 Crown Nationals by USAC at Eldora Speedway, owned by Tony Stewart, is a big event, and we wish to help all these drivers and give them a good way to go. And I appreciate everything Paul Cleveland's done, and brace yourself is a wonderful device and can give a driver peace of mind and know that they can drive hard and be aggressive and be safe in the unmistakable, inadvertent crashes that some of these vehicles have, and it's part of the sport. But we're there to help people and giving back to racing. So that's a good thing. Thank you, Tim.
Yes, sir. You're very welcome, my friend. My good friend, Tony B. My good friend, Paul Cleveland from Brace Yourself in Australia. And, Tony, thank you very much. And you've done a great job with Justin Boston. And the way Justin talks, he wants to come back on. So we'll get him back on. And
look forward to that.
Yes, sir. And, Tony, thank you very much for being a good friend of myself and Suzanne and Stephen Wilson and his wife, Anne-Marie. Thank you very much.
You guys are fantastic and do a wonderful job, and you're some of the best friends a man could ever ask for. So live, love, race, and wear the brace. Brace yourself. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Suzanne. You guys have a good evening, and I'll see you Tuesday.
Yes, sir. You too, bud. Good night. We're going to play a song right here.
Travel on, there's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door, where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate to break down the garden gate. There's not much time left today. Do all these cities
Hey, this is Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.